could go right over the top of us. That, I hate to say this, looked like a long cylindrical object.
Welcome one, welcome all, and welcome to another episode of the Paranormal Patriot. I am your host wearing the tinfoil hat. My name is Tom Velasquez. Thank you for joining me this week. And this week has turned into another episode where I'm flying by the seat of my pants. I was originally supposed to have Anthony Hudson, the 2024 presidential candidate, on this week, but he is apparently very sick, and they are going, or his campaign is basically taking him to the hospital. So let's say a prayer or two for Anthony Hudson and hope that he recovers very quickly, that it's not anything serious. And sooner or later, him and I are going to hook up and you're going to have that in an interview. But this week, being that we're coming up on Christmas, I want to talk to you about the ghosts of Christmas. And no, I'm not talking about A Christmas Carol, which is one of the best stories ever created by anyone. It is just a timeless classic. Charles Dickens went above and beyond, but we're not talking about that. We're going to talk about the ghosts of Christmas. We're going to talk about Gary McKinnon. I haven't talked about Gary McKinnon, and I think it's about time that I do. And then, you know what? These COVID vaxxers, they're relentless, and I'll give them this. They're relentless. They have their stance, and they do not stop. I, again, received a ton of people contacting me, just asking me how the hell I can speak out against COVID when I just about died from COVID. And I'm going to give you more information, because I am getting information from people all week. And then Karen from New Zealand, I apologize. Listen, it has been a rough couple months for me. It has been horrific for me. I just don't feel well, and I haven't been getting back, but I wanted to talk to you about something Karen sent me recently, and we'll end the show with that. But let's get into the ghosts of Christmas past. Now, everyone that's listening to this show, doesn't matter how old you are, we pretty much have the same Christmas traditions. We gather around a Christmas tree that's lighted. We go downtown, and downtown is festive and has wreaths and lights, and we may sing Christmas carols, and then we get together and exchange presents. It wasn't always like that. As a matter of fact, Christmas was a time for families to sit around the fire and share ghost stories. Now, you would think that this is something that normal people would do around Halloween. Well, let's look back in the Victorian times. Now, towards the end of each year, as fireplaces are lit and hot cocoa is made, people around the world made it a tradition to revisit their favorite classic holiday books, movies, and songs. And we here at my house, our tradition is every night on Christmas Eve, we go out and we drive around and look at the Christmas lights. And then we come home and we watch the Polar Express, and then we go to bed and get up and celebrate Christmas with our family. Nowhere in that equation are ghost stories even remotely thought of. That is something for Halloween. But like most long-standing cultural customs, the precise origin of telling ghost stories at the end of the year is unknown. And that's largely because it began as an oral tradition without records. But according to Sarah Clato, a folklorist specializing in British literature and co-founder of the Cartaw School of Folklore and the Fantastic, the season around the winter solstice has been one of transition and change. Sarah goes on to say that for a very, very long time, the season has provoked oral stories about spooky things in many different countries and cultures all around the world. Furthermore, Spooky storytelling gave people something to do during the long, dark evenings before electricity. She said the long midwinter nights meant folks had to stop working early. They had to stop working early because the sun went down early, and they had to huddle around the fire with their loved ones, with their family. And it just naturally led to ghost stories. And this, again, is in Victorian England. Tara Moore, who is an assistant professor of English at Elizabethtown College and the author of Victorian Christmas in Print and the editor of the Valancourt Book of Victorian Christmas Ghost Stories, says, plus, you didn't need to literate to retell the local ghost story. It was in Victorian England that telling supernatural tales at the end of the year, specifically during Christmas season, went from oral tradition to a timely trend. This was in part due to the development of the steam-powered printing press during the Industrial Revolution that made the written word more widely available. Now, the Victorians, they had higher literacy rates, and due to cheaper printing costs and more periodicals, this meant that the editors needed to fill their pages. Around Christmas time, they figured they can convert the old storytelling tradition to the printed version. People who moved out of towns and villages into larger cities still wanted access to the supernatural sagas that they heard around the fireplace while they were growing up. Telling horror-filled holiday tales continued to be a family affair in England, even when they read rather than recited. Through pictures and through illustrations and diaries, we know that whole families read these periodicals together. The popularity of Victorian Christmas ghost stories also transcended economic status. They were available to read everywhere from cheap publications to expensive Christmas annuals that middle-class ladies would show off on their coffee tables. Their broad audience was reflected in the stories themselves, which sometimes centered around working-class characters and other times took place in haunted manor houses. These upper-class settings were intended to invite readers from all classes into an idealized upper-crust Christmas. And even today, the crescendo of the Victorian ghost story Christmas is the classic A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. That is a story that would be told in a Victorian England Christmas setting, but yet we realize that this is a classic. This is a Christmas staple even today. But this is exactly what the Victorian English people would recite to their families on Christmas or on Christmas Eve around the fire when it was cold and it was dark and we didn't have electricity back then. And they would recite ghost stories. Charles Dickens epitomized everything that was going on around him in Victorian England and just encapsulated it into a Christmas story. And, you know, we see this story. I remember I was I was one of the kids in the school play in middle school of A Christmas Carol. I didn't realize that this was a story that families in Victorian England would sit around the fire and recite. And this was just a family tradition back then. This is something that in today's age, this is a story we would recite over Halloween. We wouldn't even think of doing this over Christmas because in a way it's sacrilegious because this is Jesus's birth. Why would we tell ghost stories? Well, in Victorian England, that was the norm. But as these English residents, they immigrated to America, this is one tradition that didn't go with them. The tradition kind of died with Santa Claus and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which, let's be honest, are corporate entities. Santa Claus was designed by the Coca-Cola company as a way to sell Coca-Cola. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was a song. But we've encapsulated, we've embraced Santa Claus, and we have embraced Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And that will be the story of our generation, of our culture. That may change down the line. Who knows? Maybe Krampus will be the Christmas story of future generations. We don't know, but I'm not opposed. I mean, honestly, I think it's really cool to have Christmas stories that are revolving around ghosts. I think it's cool. And that's just who I am. Some people may think, oh my gosh, Tom, are you serious? That's just for Halloween. And that's fine. You can recite the story of the wise men. And let's be honest, it's kind of a fictitious story, the birth of Jesus. Jesus was not born on December 25th. He was most likely born in sometime in September. This is what we live in today. We live in kind of a lie. I mean, our holidays that we celebrate are essentially pagan. I hate to ruin everybody's holiday, but it doesn't take away the fact that, you know, we're celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ, regardless of when it is, even if it's a couple months too late. But this is what we live. Our lives is a lie. And I'm not saying at all, don't celebrate the birth of Jesus. By all means, do. And this is when we do it. You know, I'm not opposed to ghost stories. I mean, that might be a tradition I start this year. Before we go to bed, let me give you a ghost story. Let me recite a Christmas story for you. Because that's what they did in Victorian England. And I think it's awesome. Halloween is not the only season for ghosts. Because the winter solstice is still in effect. In winter, it's when the veil is thinnest between our realm and the realm of the undead. Or the dead. And we need to celebrate that. We need to bring that back. Maybe at that point, maybe if... more, and again, this is just me talking, but maybe if we opened our minds to talking to our passed on loved ones, and maybe if we celebrated that all year round except at Halloween, maybe we could converse with our loved ones. I would love to converse with my mother and father. I would love to. But right now, it apparently... is the only time you can do that is around Halloween. And maybe we should take the winter months when it gets dark early. And screw daylight savings time. It gets dark early. It's cold. And you sit around the fire. What are you going to talk about? God bless it if you talk about politics. That'll kill you. Let's talk about ghost stories. Let's talk about what happened during the day. But bring some stories. I mean, get creative. I think the human being of today is less creative than he was years ago and decades and generations ago. We don't have that creativity in us because we don't need it. It's given to us. Maybe we need to reset and change the way we do things every now and then. I'm not saying everybody needs to go and scare the living daylights out of their kids on Christmas. But let me know. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4, that's the number 4, @charter.net, charter.net. Contact me, ghostseeker4@charter.net. And let me know, hey, I told a ghost story over Christmas. Let me know how it goes. So with that, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk. We are going to talk Gary McKinnon. Gary McKinnon, you may know, you may not know. So sit back, relax, open that mind. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be right back.
And we wish you a Merry Christmas. Christmas time, let's all have some holiday cheer. We gotta make the best of this coronavirus year. Let's spend
It's been a hard year on all of us. This much is true. I can't help thinking that I can't wait until this year is finally through. Coronavirus lockdowns, riot and election blues, depression and depravity is all we see on the news. Things are gonna get better. This can't last forever. We will get through this if we just learn to work together. We've seen our loved ones suffer and people so lonely. It's bad enough that these problems aren't the one and only, but it seems like every week there's something new. If you're down and out and depressed, I wouldn't blame you, but never fear, there's something on its way. A season so wonderful, it's gonna change your day. Christmas is the cure for the corona blues. Spread the joy of the season and the virus will lead the news.
It's Christmas time, let's all have some holiday.
Have you thought about getting into crypto? Are you oblivious on where to start or even what to do? Hit up the Bitcoin pro Jay Motley to help you get started on the path to a better financial situation for free. No hidden fees, no charges, just guidance. Go to bitcoinpro.unitedinvestors.group and get started today. Again, that's bitcoinpro.unitedinvestors.group and tell them W sent you.
Counting the stars like city lights. I don't know where I'll end up later. Maybe lost in the ashes, lost in the ashes.
Okay, so many of you have heard of Gary McKinnon, and many of you have not heard of Gary McKinnon. Now, I'm going to tell you who Gary McKinnon is, because there is a lot of truth to the story that is being supplanted and kind of squashed by the media and by the government regarding what Gary McKinnon has found. So by a show of hands, and just raise your hands, I'm sure I can see them, how many of you think that NASA is withholding what they know about an alien presence and extraterrestrials in general? I'm sure that number is very large. I think I saw a bunch of hands up. But this Gary McKinnon thing, it all started when Gary McKinnon, who's a British hacker, shared his findings after hacking into the NASA files 2 decades ago. Apparently, the United States government was so concerned about Gary McKinnon after he gained access to these NASA files, they threatened the now 56-year-old former hacker with jail for more than 60 years. Now, after lengthy appeals, the then Secretary or Interior Secretary Theresa May blocked McKinnon's extradition, and she has now spoken out about exactly what she found in the NASA computers. In an interview with the British newspaper The Sun, McKinnon claimed to have unearthed thousands of images, one of which showed a cigar-shaped alien spacecraft. Now, McKinnon, he gained access to these images between February 2001 and March 2002 and assured the space agency is quote-unquote covering up evidence of extraterrestrial life. He went on to say, "It is a fact that there are objects that we do not understand that are flying in our skies. It is also a fact that there are scientific, intelligence, and military departments that study these objects. I was absolutely stunned, and those folders had thousands more images." Now, by order of the U.S. authorities, McKinnon was arrested in 2002 and then in 2005, told that his hacking caused more than $700,000 worth of damage. In blocking McKinnon's extradition in 2012, Theresa May cited McKinnon's Asperger syndrome and Keir Starmer, who was the director of public prosecutions at the time, was confirmed that the hacker would not face charges in the UK. Now, Gary McKinnon is a UK citizen, just so you know. McKinnon is certain that evidence of UFOs is being hidden in the U.S. and was inspired to hack NASA files after Donna Hare, a former NASA worker claimed that the space agency had been deleting UFO evidence images in an attempt to verify Hare's claim. McKinnon gained access to the NASA files and claims to have seen four folders marked leaked without filter, processed, and unedited. However, due to a slow internet connection, McKinnon was only able to copy one image from the space agency's folder, the image of the cigar-shaped spacecraft. Several media outlets, including The Sun, have attempted to contact NASA for comment. However, per his policy, they have not and will not respond. Interestingly, last May, the U.S. Space Agency announced that it would intensify its efforts to search for answers to UFOs. NASA confirmed it would assist U.S. government investigations into the search for extraterrestrial life following the first congressional hearings on what they now call UAP, or Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, which has lasted over 50 years. However, McKinnon doesn't think the renewed interest will lead to much more to disclosure, and he has questions about the motivations behind it. He says the hearings, they're not significant at all for disclosure. These hearings, the panel discussions and like, are never fruitful for disclosure. He went on to say that we must not forget the military mentality. The unknown is a threat and a potential use for a tool against said country. The disclosure comes from witnesses, not the military or the government. All they give us is lies. Again, that is per Gary McKinnon. Now, the former hacker is convinced that the United States is covering up information about UFOs, either because the ships are so advanced that they are beyond human comprehension, or because they have managed to extract secret technology from mysterious objects that they want to keep hidden. After allegedly hacking into NASA websites where he said he found images of what looked like extraterrestrial spaceships, the then 40-year-old Briton faces extradition to the United States from his North London home. If convicted, McKinnon could receive a 70-year prison term and up to $2 million in fines. This is because he allegedly hacked into NASA websites where he said he found images of what looked like extraterrestrial spacecraft and spreadsheets that were titled Non-Terrestrial Officers. That spreadsheet contained names and ranks of U.S. Air Force personnel who are not registered anywhere else. It also contained information about ship-to-ship transfers, but according to Mr. McKinnon, he's never seen the names of the ship noted anywhere else. But let's listen to some NASA astronauts. Now, say what you want about Buzz Aldrin. A lot of people say, oh, this guy's crazy. This guy's got dementia. This guy's got Alzheimer's. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But he's been on the record for decades saying that there's things he saw that do not make sense up there. Let's listen to some of the things that astronaut Buzz Aldrin has had to say regarding his trip to the moon.
I saw this illumination that was moving with respect to the stars. We were smart enough to not say, Houston, there's a light out there that's following us. So technically, it becomes an unidentified flying object.
That was Buzz Aldrin. Now we are going to hear from Apollo 17 astronaut Jack Smith, who saw flashes on the moon. A dead moon. I don't even know what else to call it. A dead moon, a dead planetary object. They saw flashes on the moon prior to their landing. And this, again, is from NASA's Apollo 17 mission. And as much as I've looked, I cannot find the audio, but Buzz Aldrin has confirmed this. Apparently, the story as Neil Armstrong set foot as the first human on another planet or on the moon, he switched to the medical channel. And Michigan Troll said, "What's there?" Michigan Troll calling Apollo 11. Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong's response was, "These babies are huge, sir. Enormous. Oh, God. You wouldn't believe it. I'm telling you, there are other spacecraft out there lined up on the far side of the crater edge. They're on the moon watching us." Now, this apparently was picked up by numerous ham radio operators where they cannot control what is being heard. The ham radio operators are hearing it as NASA is hearing it. And then we have Apollo 10, who circled, orbited the moon, and on their second revolution around the moon, on the dark side of the moon, they heard this.
That it needs to keep it sound out of spacey, doesn't it? Do you hear that? That whistling sound?
And then lastly, we're going to hear from Apollo 8 as they were traversing. Now keep in mind, Apollo 8 at this point, as they were traversing around the far side of the moon, they at that point there hasn't been no other human that has been that far away from Earth. And they were seeing things that we can't see because we don't see the far side of the moon. And this, they lose communication with NASA because of the moon. It blocks communications. However, on the spacecraft, they have an audio recorder that records the transcripts of what the astronauts are saying as they traverse. Now, as they were traversing the dark side of the moon, they saw something, and NASA swept it under the rug, and it came out over years and years and years. It finally became public knowledge. Listen to this.
"There's a strange light down there.
Is it a bonfire?
It might be some campfires."
Now, truth be told, I don't know about the legitimacy of this particular conversation. I don't know of any English women that would have been communicating with this, so take that with a grain of salt. But Gary McKinnon hacked the NASA files to the point that the American government was terrified that information was going to get out, and they threatened to extradite him. And the UK government got a hold of these documents and said, "Nope, you're not going to extradite him." They saw something in those files that said, yeah, that's true. What he saw, what he's stating is true. Was Space Force really Space Force before Donald Trump? I mean, did we have non-terrestrial officers navigating the solar system? I mean, and what are they doing it for? Is there an extraterrestrial presence that we need to combat? Or are we getting ready to travel the stars? I don't know. I really don't know the answer. I'm a firm believer. I guess I do know the answer. Yes. Yes to everything. We are not alone. There are aliens on the moon. The moon landings, listen, I think they did take place. There's a lot of stuff that's not legitimate on the pictures and what we're seeing on the moon landing, but I don't think that is because we didn't go. I think it's because it was destroyed by the radiation, because the moon doesn't have that protective ozone layer like we do. We'll see. Let me know what you think. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Alrighty, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I've got to respond to the COVID people that are giving me a bunch of grief. So sit back, relax, and open that mind. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I will be right back.
Santa Claus is coming down the chimney. Is he going to wear a mask? I really didn't think about it, but it's 2020, so I guess it wouldn't hurt. I guess we just gotta look at it as a little bit of a test. But don't you worry, cause Santa Claus is coming, and what's left is gonna be the best. I hope you've been good, but if you've been naughty, there's still time.
cheer. Invite your loved ones over and have a little party and tell them that you love them dear.
It's Christmas time, let's all have some holiday cheer. We've gotta make the best of this corona.
Hello, and welcome to the Ohio Hauntings and Legends podcast. We will be taking you to places you have never dreamt of going. Hundreds, if not thousands, of haunted and abandoned locations. We will visit with the paranormal from your nightmares and try to understand the unexplained. Ohio alone has 88 counties within our state, and virtually each one of those counties has a story to tell. Ohio's history is bloodstained throughout its history. We will be covering more than just Ohio. We will cover the state you live in, the country. Trust me. There are thrills, chills, and we are upping the fright factor with each new stop we make. We will be traveling the world, the globe, looking for the strange, the mysterious, and the frightening. Mostly, we will find the unexplainable. Many of these episodes are genuine. Others are legend or hearsay. Believe those that you choose, or believe in none. It is your choice. Just get comfortable, sit back, dim the lights, and listen.
Phone rings. It's night. Two nights of sleep, blown in my head, don't know what to do. I know it's true. I don't wanna say it, but you leave me way less than I need you. I know you want a space so you can think about it. Silence is killing me and I'm freaking out. Wanna say all the words.
Alrighty, welcome back to the show, and I've got to come back at you COVID people that are totally going off on me on my show. I've received so many emails from you people over the last 2 weeks, how I am a COVID denier and an anti-vaxxer, and, you know, oh, you call yourself true blood, oh my God, or pure blood, oh my gosh, that is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Well, it is what it is. I'm going to tell you, I am getting inundated with people emailing me in response to you of the facts. Let's talk about this new peer-reviewed study which proves that COVID-19 vaccines increase the risk of cardiac arrest in young patients by 25%. Now, the data analysis was published on April 28, 2022 in the British journal Nature. Nature is one of the most prestigious scientific journals in the world. The research was co-authored by Drs. Christopher Sun, a postdoctoral fellow with healthcare system engineering at Massachusetts General Hospital, and with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Sloan School of Management. Now, they went on to say that their team analyzed data collected by Israel's National Emergency Medical Services between 2019 and 2021. They found that there was over a 25% increase in emergency calls about cardiac arrest and acute coronary syndrome, an umbrella term for coronary problems associated with sudden onset reduced blood flow to the heart. Now, this is according to the Mayo Clinic. And most of the patients that they found were between 16 and 39 years old, compared to the same time between both 2019 and 2020. Furthermore, the researchers discovered that the increasing emergency heart issues were associated with COVID-19 vaccinations, but not with COVID-19 infections. They explain, and I'm going to quote them, an increase of over 25% was detected compared with the years 2019 to 2020. The weekly emergency call counts were significantly associated with the rates of first and second vaccine doses administered to this age group, again, 16 to 29, but were not with COVID-19 infection rates. While not establishing causal relationships, the findings raise concerns regarding vaccine-induced undetected severe cardiovascular side effects and underscore the already established causal relationship between vaccine and myocarditis, a frequent cause of unexpected cardiac arrest in young individuals. This is what we've been saying. This is what I've been saying. Where did you ever hear of myocarditis? You never heard it, unless somebody in your family or someone you knew had it. Now, that is a general term. Everybody knows what it is. It's inflammation of the heart. And it always occurs in people that have had the COVID-19 vaccine. At this point, the scientific community has started to document the side effects. Now, for instance, in June of 2021, an international team of 16 scientists published a research letter noting that the temporal relationship between the onset and acute myocarditis in 8 adult men between the ages of 21 and 56. This is something that these people never had any heart issues, and they get the COVID vaccine, and now they have myocarditis. These scientists writing in the journal Circulation underscored that the real incident of acute myocarditis after the COVID vaccine appears to be extremely rare, given the millions of people who have been vaccinated seemingly without incident. Still, they wrote, providers should be vigilant for myocarditis after COVID-19 vaccinations, and further research is required to understand the long term. And here's the key. Further research is required to understand the long-term cardiovascular risks. Here's the thing. VAERS. VAERS has had hundreds and thousands of different complaints and incidences after the COVID-19 vaccination. In days gone by, if you had a vaccine that killed 10 people, it was taken off the market. It was gone. It was deemed a failure. For some reason, and I think we all can figure out why that reason is, the COVID vaccine is killing thousands of people a year. So far, we don't even know what it's going to do after a couple of years. I am now going to play a portion of an interview with Dr. Malone on Epoch, however you want to pronounce it, news. Dr. Malone has been blacklisted. He was one of the doctors that was all for ivermectin. He was one of the doctors all for hydroxychloroquine, which the government said, nope, do not prescribe those medicines to COVID patients. Let's give them remdesivir. Well, I am a victim of remdesivir. Now, we're going to go off topic here. I know a lot of people. Karen, thank you so much for being concerned. I just got news that the liver issue I've been running into that has been caused by this remdesivir is not as bad as I thought. It is not full-blown cirrhosis. It is basically non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. It is my liver is just scarred up big time, and I really have to be careful. So, thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your concerns. I'm still going to be kicking around, and I'm actually starting to feel better. I've lost 15 pounds. I'm eating better. You know, not that I was a big drinker, but I'm not drinking anymore. And it's making a big difference, but it is because of the remdesivir that the hospital gave me, because that was the government regulation. That's what we were supposed to be given when you had COVID, even though it has been proven that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine were the holy grail of the medicines. But listen to this interview on Epoch News with Dr. Robert Malone.
Hey, Dr. Malone, thanks for being on Crossroads.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You know, I was reading your Substack about immune imprinting, and I'll be honest, it's complicated. I think I have a general idea of it, but it's very, very deep, and I want to talk about what immune imprinting is. And this explains, I think, why a lot of people who have the vaccine seem to be dying at higher rates than those who do not have the vaccine. So what is immune imprinting?
Not only dying, but it's important to know that what the data are showing us from all over the world is that with Omicron, what the people that are getting infected and getting infected repeatedly, not just dying but also getting hospitalized or having the more severe symptoms, are the people that have undergone this process of immune imprinting that has been reinforced typically by multiple vaccines, or I prefer really to call them inoculations, because they're really not functioning as a prophylactic vaccine anymore. The question is, why are these people that have had these repeated vaccinations the ones that are getting the more severe infections, disease, and death? It's a paradox. You would think that they would be protected. That's certainly what we've been told by the U.S. government and various people in the U.S. government, we don't have to go over the names, is that these vaccines will protect us against disease and death. And yet, what we've seen over time, particularly in the British data, because they have been relatively transparent, and also from some of the Canadian provinces, not from Canadian National, is we've seen this gradual shift over time as Omicron has entered the population, where more a larger and larger and larger fraction of the people getting hospitalized or dying are the ones that have had these repeated inoculations. Why is this? It's a paradox. And since the outset, one of the first podcasts I did was on antibody-dependent enhancement. And the FDA acknowledged that antibody-dependent enhancement was a potential risk. It's in the original documents that the FDA put out. Antibody-dependent enhancement is one particular type of immune-enhanced disease. What we're seeing is something different. And it's the underlying process that makes it so that the influenza vaccines, when they're repeatedly administered year after year after year, if you look at the trends for how effective they've been, effective means how good are they at protecting people in the field from disease and death. Remember, most influenza deaths, just like most coronavirus deaths, are in the old folks, okay? And over time, influenza vaccine effectiveness has declined down to now it's routinely in the 20 to 30% range, okay?
Wow.
It's the same process. The problem is that when you give a vaccine, particularly these vaccines that are very simple immunologically, they're only expressing one of the proteins of the whole virus. In our case, it's spike protein with the coronavirus, right? In influenza, it's two antigens, but that's a nuance. When you give that one antigen, your immune system gets trained to respond to that one antigen. And your immune system, my friends in the military understand the idea, we're always best prepared for the last war. Your immune system is like that. Or you know it in your own personal life. You've had your own experiences in the past, and they bias how you approach the world, right? You bring that baggage of all the things you've experienced in all your years, and they influence how you respond to new things. Your immune system is the same way. Okay, so the experience that your immune system has had, that it's learned from, genetically actually learned from, will make it so that it will respond to something that looks very similar, as if it is the old virus, the old antigen. Okay, and that makes it so that it's hard for it to adapt if that antigen has changed slightly, if that virus has changed slightly, it still reacts as if it's the old one.
Now, how does repeated vaccination affect that? Because it seems like normal vaccination would impact that, but how does repeated vaccination change that?
So what it does is we have this really diverse array of cells, B cells and T cells. We're all becoming immunologists and epidemiologists now, right? The immune system is incredibly complex and very, very, very diverse. And you have this huge swarm of potential ability to react to things that is built into your immune system. It's an amazing system. And it's multi-layered. There's more ancient versions. We talk about the innate immune system and the adaptive immune system. Right now we're talking about the adaptive immune system, which is the more modern one. Okay, B and T cells. And what happens is this process where as your immune system encounters an antigen, it selects for things that react to that and deletes the things that don't. And so when we give something again and again and again, like Wuhan 1 spike, okay, this is to a virus that doesn't even exist anymore. It's not in circulation, right? We keep giving it, and what it does is it trains your immune system more and more and more to focus on that and disregard anything else that's slightly different.
So it starts pushing out your other immunities, in other words.
The other ones that could be reactive. And this is the paradox. So immune imprinting has long been known in vaccinology. It's one of the things that generally we're not allowed to talk about as vaccinologists. No, seriously, I've lost multiple clients, because I used to do a lot of influenza vaccine work. I lost multiple clients for raising the issues of immune imprinting historically over the last 20 years. It is a third rail. If you're a vaccinologist and you're an industrial vaccinologist, this is the stuff you don't want anybody to know about. You want to deny it.
So this is making people's immune system essentially weaker. You're inoculating them over and over against...
There's actually a couple of different things happening. There's this training of your immune system to just focus on one thing and exclude everything else. And then there actually is also evidence of damage, more systemic damage to your immune system with this vaccine technology.
So it's not only pushing out your other immunities and replacing it with things that are kind of like defunct, which is kind of like dead variants, essentially, of viruses, but it's also damaging your immune system in the process.
In a deep way, and that literature is not as strong right now. It's still emerging, but the literature on immune imprinting is bomb-proof. Paper after paper after paper now in the top peer-reviewed journals, from the top laboratories all across the world are documenting it.
I read your Substack, and you link these. I think you had more than a dozen there, probably. Yeah.
And there was more. I could have gone on and on. This, and the amazing thing is that our good friends at Health and Human Services completely disregard this. They act as if it's like monkey, you know, the classic hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. They are completely disregarding this science, which has been out there. It's been out there since the beginning of this year. They act as if it doesn't exist, but unfortunately it does. And then how do you know that it's hard for me to process what's going on. We've just purchased $3.2 billion of a trivalent vaccine from BioNTech Pfizer.
Well, and that's the one they want to roll out this coming...
just before the election.
Yeah, yeah.
With no clinical trials. They've already bought, they've executed the contract for $3.2 billion worth of purchase for a vaccine that hasn't been built yet, that will not be clinically tested, that will be deployed on short notice. And this is more wonky words, okay? It's trivalent.
Trivalent, what is that?
That means that it has three different spikes. That's the proposal.
Wait, so this is different from the Wuhan spike protein.
It has Wuhan 1, which is what we've all, the ones that are used now are all Wuhan 1. And it has the BA4 and the BA5. Now, BA4 has already gone in the population.
That's Omicron, right?
That's Omicron. These are the new Omicron variations. BA4 is already essentially outcompeted by BA5. In South Africa, that was an early wave of BA5, it's already tapering. It's going out of the population. Now, it's important that South Africa has mostly natural immunity, not vaccine immunity.
And some of the lowest death rates in the world, ironically.
Precisely. You know what's really at the bottom of the death rates? Fascinating. You'd never think it. Haiti.
Okay, we're going to end it there. I will continue this interview with Dr. Robert Malone because the information gathered is incredible. It proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that these vaccines are not only not stopping us from getting COVID, not stopping us from transmitting COVID, but they're killing us. So on future shows, I will be playing the remainder of this interview. If you want to hear it, let me know at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4@charter.net. All right, everybody. That's it. We are going to stop the show here. Coronavirus Christmas. Multiple Myself and Tommy V Christmas Song from 2020. Thank you for listening. I will be back hopefully next week. It's Christmas Eve weekend, so I hope I'll be here. I plan on it.
I'm Tommy V.
Thank you for listening. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be back next week. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Some time together.
It's been a hard year on all of us. This much is true. I can't help thinking that I can't wait until this year is finally through. Coronavirus lockdowns, riot and election blues, depression and depravity is all we see on the news. Things are gonna get better. This can't last forever. We will get through this if we just learn to work together. We've seen our loved ones suffer and people so lonely. It's bad enough that these problems aren't the one and only. But it seems like every week there's something new. If you're down and out and depressed, I wouldn't blame you. But never fear, there's something on its way. A season so wonderful, it's gonna change your day. Christmas is the cure for the corona blues. Spread the joy of the season and the virus will lead the news.
It's Christmas time, let's all have